All right, we're in Windows World with Bruce Worthington, and we're going to talk about power. So tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, a little bit of your history.
Sure. So I've been here 14 years, and when I came on board, I came from IBM, where I was in the OS performance group there. I was brought on board there by Michael Fortin and a few others.
Nice.
So you've seen some videos from them already. Yeah. There was a whole crew of us there that eventually ended up here.
Wow.
Basically a train that went on for about 7 years with a person coming up each year.
Nice.
So Maher Saba, Michael Fortin, Stephen Shaw, a bunch of other great guys. So from working on OS Perf there, I started working on OS Perf here.
Okay.
And I was a server guy back then. And so I spent most of my time dealing with the interface between the hardware and the software. Love talking to the IHVs and the OEMs and understanding how their hardware works, and then understanding how our software interacts with it.
Mm.
And in a lot of cases, it's interesting because they're pointing fingers at us, we're pointing fingers at them. But if you get down there in the middle of it, you can actually find out where the problems are and point the finger in the right direction and get it solved. So
excellent.
I enjoy that interaction with the hardware vendors very much.
Mm.
Also did a lot of storage performance work. That was, I got my PhD in storage performance. And so that's a cap that I've never quite lost. You never lose your caps. You just keep adding caps over the years. So I still work with the performance team quite a bit on the storage side.
Awesome.
Right now, I lead the team in Windows Fundamentals on the performance team that's focused on energy efficiency.
Excellent.
And about 6 years ago, I noticed that we really weren't spending very much time on server power. Some time clearly was being spent on client power and looking at battery life, but pretty much nobody looking at server power. I kind of bugged my management and eventually cannibalized some of my own resources on my team and started looking at server power. And so 2008 and 2008 R2, I was involved in server power there. And then when we did the big reorg after Windows 8 was birthed, I ended up owning the client-side power as well. We merged the teams. So now my team is in charge of power from the tablet all the way up through the data center, which is an interesting span with a wide variety of workloads and hardware and people. So we get to talk to everybody. It's great to have that kind of span, though.
Absolutely.
And it's a lot of fun, too.
So, I mean, one of the things that we know about Windows 8, at least on the client, is it uses less power, right? This is why the battery can last longer.
That's what we're saying.
Well, I mean, this is what I'd like to talk to you about.
Sure.
And, you know, how is that actually the case? So tell us about the advancements you've made, you and your team have made,
sure,
in power consumption of this new operating system.
Sure. So I guess the easiest way to start is to draw a parallel or draw a comparison, I guess is a better term, mm-hmm, between previous versions of the OS and Windows 8. Nothing against the power work that was done previously on the client side. Great work. I can tell you the names of the guys that worked on Windows 7 and Vista, et cetera, and power. Great stuff. But we did a sea change here. We did a major change in terms of elevating power to being a first-class citizen. And it was a very difficult change. None of the developers, or few of the developers in Windows, were thinking that way in previous releases. We had to make power a number one criteria to ship. And so one of the things that we spent a lot of time on then was doing what we call hygiene. And I think Michael actually referred to this in one of his presentations as well. But looking at the CPU, looking at the network, looking at the disk as three of the primary potential power consumers, and finding where we weren't just quite being as quiet as we should be or as energy efficient as we should be, and cleaning our house. And our house was pretty dirty when it comes right down to it. We were used to having all the energy we wanted, and thus we had lots of activities that would go on. We would pull, we would spin, we would do things that made us very responsive, but at the same time were not power efficient.
Mm.
And so we really had to go in, and we actually had some issues with our IHVs and OEMs in the past where they would say, hey, you know, you guys are awfully noisy, you're beating on the system a lot and you're draining the battery. And we had to make sure that was absolutely not going to be the case for Windows 8. We had to have our house completely clean, so that then we could, with clean conscience, go to our IHVs and OEMs and ISVs and say, okay, we're clean, you got to be clean too. And so very much for this release, the best way to get, and you talk to any power person, the best way to say power is to get down to the deepest state and stay there as long as you possibly can. And so that's what really hygiene is all about. Let's clear out all the clutter. Let's get down to the lowest power states on the network, on the CPU, on the disk, on every device in the system. Let's get down and stay down and be quiet, 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 quiet. So if you look at, let's take the CPU as an example. If you look at the number of times we would wake up the CPU per second on Windows 7, you would typically see numbers on the order of 1 millisecond. So we would literally be waking up the CPU 1,000 times per second. If you look at Windows 8, on at least a clean system, you will probably see numbers that are greater than 100 milliseconds. So we basically jumped about two orders of magnitude forward in Windows 8. Now, 100 milliseconds still sounds like a pretty short period of time, heck of a lot longer than 1 millisecond. And, you know, in the computer scale, we can get up and down into these idle states fairly fast. So 100's okay. I'm already looking forward, though, to the next release and how can we move that needle even farther, especially as we start interacting more and more with our phone brethren. You know, they want us to be quiet for multiple seconds at a time, if not, you know, they even talk about minutes in some scenarios, which is pretty far afield for us to be thinking about minutes of being completely quiet. But at least getting into the multi-second, I'm definitely already thinking about that. But we moved the needle a lot. We got very quiet on the CPU side. On the disk side, we have something we call disk coalescing, where we basically take disk activity that really doesn't need to go to the disk quite yet, and we just put it all together into a burst. And that's really, I came from a performance background. I was a perf guy for many, many years before I was ever a power guy. And it's very much a different mindset. In perf, we're spreading stuff out. We're doing stuff over, you know, wider periods of time, and that way we can be more responsive. We're spreading things. In power, we're bursting. We squeeze stuff together. We want to do it in a burst and then get down deep again very, very quickly. So there really is a bit of tension at times between the power side and the perf side. Nevertheless, we try to find ways. I'm in a hallway full of perf guys, right? So I have to keep my perf hat on as well and try to find those ways we can improve both at the same time whenever possible. But from a disk perspective, again, taking the IOs that really don't need to go down to the disk yet and coalescing those into bursts of activity during, for example, connected standby, which we can talk about if you want during Windows 8. That, again, is a big advantage. Same thing on the network side. Really don't want to keep waking up the network. You might think of something like 3G and 4G. Turns out when you connect to the tower, you have a tail of time where the AT&T, et cetera, don't really want us to drop our connection very quickly because we might want to reconnect again, you know, pretty soon. And so there's a period of seconds, if not longer, even tens of seconds, where they really want us to hang on to that signal. Well, we're burning a lot of power while we're hanging on to that connection to the tower. And so every time if you get a workload that's doing little bursts, little network packets, your antenna never goes down, your connection never drops. You are up all the time, and that means burning a half a watt to a watt, doing very little. What you want to do is burst it in a packet and then go down and stay down. So it's really the same thing across the different resources. Be as hygienic as you possibly can, get quiet, get low, stay low for as long as you can.
Excellent.
That's one of the main themes that we had to do. We had to bake it into everything we did. And let me tell you, during the early milestones, there was a lot of education. There was a lot of you know, taking it to the developers and saying, you guys, you can't give me an answer that, no, that's architectural, we can't change that. That's not an acceptable answer. You've got to go out there and figure out how to stop polling, how to stop spinning, how to stop having so many timers, how to stop having disk activity where you're going to the disk every minute saying, nothing happened, nothing happened, nothing happened. That's not useful. Or going to the network and saying, are you still alive yet? Are you still alive? Are you still alive? Things like that just drive me nuts now. Before, I would understand that, saying, oh, that keeps you nice and responsive, but now it drives me nuts. So that kind of hygiene was one of the big things that, from a Windows developer perspective, we had to take it in, we had to breathe it in, and become very, very power sensitive. And as a result, it's actually, I think, interesting that if you run Windows 8 on a Windows 7 PC, on a traditional laptop, if you will, you'll actually see power wins there, even though we didn't focus these efforts on that system. You'll find multiple articles out there where people have done tests and they've said, you know, hey, my MacBook, I ran Windows 8 on it and I get an hour longer battery life than I did in Windows 7. I'm like, that's just gravy, right? That's just totally a bonus for us because we weren't focusing on that type of hardware necessarily. But this hygiene work is just a win. It wins everywhere.
Awesome.
So that's one of the big things. Connected Standby is probably also worth bringing up. And I know that you've had other talks probably that have focused on it, but I'll give you my perspective and the things that my team has done. So for those of you who perhaps don't know, speaking to the audience, Connected Standby is the state we go into on some of the new hardware, like the new slates, like the new Surface Slate, for example. It's the state we go into when the screen goes off. And it's called Connected Standby because unlike your traditional laptop where, okay, the screen goes off, but then a little bit later it goes to sleep, we never sleep. We go down to a very low power state, but you can still receive instant messages or Skype calls or whatever it is, the same things that your phone does, except for actually a phone message per se. We're awake. We're able to receive certain kinds of activity while it's sitting in your backpack, while it's sitting on the coffee table, while it's by your nightstand. Well, in order to be in that state and have a decent battery life, you got to go really deep and stay really quiet. And so we target average power draw in Connected Standby of, say, less than 100 milliwatts. You can think of being in that category, less than a tenth of a watt, which is pretty low. And you can last a pretty long time on, a 30 or 40 watt hour battery. You can last a pretty long time if you only burn in 100 milliwatts. And so, you know, again, hygiene is part of it, but we also force it as well. We actually take certain activities and say, I don't care if there's a timer that needed to go off or a disk I/O that needed to happen. We're going to put a 30-second delay in there right now and not do anything for 30 seconds. Now, if a phone call, and that's not a phone call, if a Skype call comes in, we'll still take that. Mm-hmm. But for all the stuff that kind of background work, busy work, mm-hmm. we're just going to not do it for 30 seconds. And then we'll wake up and check to see and do a little bit of busy work and say, okay, let's go back down for 30 seconds. So we've got these nice long 30-second periods all the time, just constantly going on, where we're quiet. We're really quiet.
So I think that one of the questions that people who don't write operating systems at that level would like to know, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, clearly there's some sort of state machine, there's some sort of executing code that's doing the wake up. I mean, it's not like it magically wakes up. I mean, you're pushing electrons on the silicon to do this work.
Right.
What exactly is that construct?
So again, let's draw the sort of the parallel to the traditional system. On a traditional system, you might have a clock, a system clock, that's waking you up, say, every 15 milliseconds. Mm-hmm. A very common thing to find 15, 16 milliseconds, you'll wake up. And so there you got the hardware that's just waking up the CPU all the time. One of the things we did in Windows 8 was to say, we don't really need to have the clock waking us up all the time. And beyond just Connected Standby, even during screen on time, if we don't have anything to do right away, we will start skipping clock ticks, and we'll actually program the hardware to say, you don't need to interrupt me next time. Let's wait until there's actually a reason for me to wake up. Don't just give me a clock tick for the heck of it.
Got it.
During Connected Standby, of course, we're even more aggressive about that. During that 30-second period, the only thing that we're really going to take an interrupt on is from the network card. If the network card detects a specific kind of packet that's important enough to wake up the CPU, there's a bunch of packets it won't even wake us up on. But if it's a Skype call coming in, it'll say, okay, this rates, I'm going to go ahead and wake up the CPU. Other than that, for that 30 seconds, the power button and the network card are about the only interrupts that really are going to be lighting us up. So that's one thing is the clock. But there's also all the timers that go on in the system, right? We're constantly saying, okay, I need to do something or I need to check something in 20 milliseconds from now or 200 milliseconds from now. So again, we're programming a hardware, basically a register in the hardware that's going to, when that time rolls around, the clock rolls around to that point, it's going to give us an interrupt. So again, if we say we're not going to take any timer interrupts for the next 30 seconds, and we'll just set the timer in the hardware 30 seconds forward, it's going to be quiet. We're not going to take any hardware interrupts other than, again, the NIC or the power button or the battery if you are going down to the 3% and you really need to shut down or something like that. So we really limit the number of things that could wake us up. And from an architectural perspective, it's all about that hardware register or the clock that was going to wake us up, but we chose not to program it quite so soon. Let's let it go a little ways down the line. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. But I kind of want to ensure that we keep these conversations for a broad audience.
Sure.
They need to understand what the great work you guys have done, and we can get down into the nitty-gritty, which of course is also fun, and I enjoy that, and as do a lot of people. So I think one of the first questions I would ask is, what did you learn from your experience in server workload, power management, and power efficiency, which is of course important, and how did you take that, and how did it make sense on the client? So Because they're very different workloads.
That is a tough question. And that's the key issue, is they are completely different workloads and completely different hardware. It really is, you're stepping into a completely new world. And so when I switched from server to client, I came into client, or when I added client, I should say, I still own server pieces. I was a total newbie, and let me tell you, I had to learn so many things in that first half a year to a year. All the things that I had basically been ignoring, I didn't care about media playback or USB or, SD cards. I mean, these are all concepts that are very client-focused concepts that I just didn't have to worry about in the server space. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, these things become crucial. USB can be a huge power hog. Video playback, which of course, on the server side, we would never consider. Video playback is probably our number one scenario that we really grabbed hold of and made sure that we did a killer job on for Windows 8. I mean, there were other scenarios like idle and connected standby and audio playback and browsing, but video playback is one that we grabbed with both hands. And of course, I knew nothing about the graphics stack or the media engine or any of these things, and my team didn't either. And so it was definitely a group effort for us to all go and start learning what's important on the client side. So the things we brought were probably mostly high-level concepts.
Okay.
Very few of the specific things that we did on the server side were actually all that applicable to the client side. Now, let me temper that a little bit. There is a bit of growth from the client to the server and the server to the client side. If you look at a big piece of server hardware now, it actually looks a lot like a PC did a few years ago. You know, a two-socket system nowadays is a monster. You can do unbelievable amounts of work on a two-socket server, whereas before we had to have 64 sockets or, these massive, massive systems. I can take you into the lab and show you superdomes and massive systems. Nowadays, the hardware is starting to look more and more alike. So there is more crossover, I'd say, now than there was before. But before, we were interested in four-socket and above on the server side. We were looking at the big stuff. And client side, obviously, there were no four-socket client systems. Everything was one socket with a few two-socket workstations. So I hate to dodge the question other than to say, there really wasn't that much. It was a learning experience, and the high-level concepts about performance and power, obviously, those translate well.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came down to the working in the trenches, brand new world.
Interesting. Now, the reason I asked it is because it seems like now that we've moved in this age of cloud client computing, and particularly the cloud, where we're going to move a lot of computation and a lot of the consumption of electrons down in, they call it a cloud, but it's probably underground somewhere. I do wonder about energy efficient computing is so important in that space because, come on, I mean, if you have a data center with 50,000 servers, I'm not saying that I know of any of that, but let's pretend like there is
ours.
Ours, okay. So we have
Microsoft has many, many tens many of servers. Thousands, hundreds of thousands of servers.
So, I mean, talk to me about certainly you're not worried about battery life, but this is a finite resource.
Absolutely. The server space, when we saw the lack of interest and time being spent in the space, it's because we did see the wall coming, sort of the electrical wall coming. All these data centers out there that were built for, say, 5, 6, 7, 8 kilowatts per rack, well, now that's about this much of the rack, before you're going to start hitting that. You're using 20, 25 kilowatts per rack now. And so all of a sudden, space became an issue, and of course, electricity is not exactly cheap, and they charge you for your peak power usage as well, more than even your sustained. So, the electric cost, the fact that we're running out of rack space because we're burning up so much power in such a small cubic space, there's just a bunch of different parameters that were getting red lights all over them. And so from the server side, it's very important. If you look at the amount of compute power that we're packing in per cubic inch right now, it's incredible compared to where we were. People don't want to build new data centers, though. That's the huge cost more than anything else. You want to be able to pack more transactions into your existing data centers. Because building a new one is a multi-billion dollar effort, right? And just a huge, huge thing. And Microsoft has certainly built a lot of them in the last 10 years and knows all the pain associated with trying to find and create a data center environment. But anyways, the point being, one way you can keep from having to build a new data center is if you get more efficient about the data centers that you have. And there are various ways that we can improve the power efficiency of the servers themselves. In fact, we actually were actively involved with the Energy Star for servers early on when the government was first looking at how to create an Energy Star program for servers. Of course, your laptops all come with the Energy Star logo on them, but servers didn't have one a few years ago. In fact, they only really now really kicking into gear where we're in the place where servers are having to go through some pretty significant Energy Star requirements in order to get the sticker. And if you don't get the sticker, you don't go to some governments or you don't go to some, you know, offices or whatever. So it's pretty important. Microsoft was very early in that. We consulted with the Energy Star guys at the government and gave them a lot of feedback on what they needed to think about when designing the criteria and the tests, etc. And we're still involved. So we were thinking a lot about what are the pieces within the server that are opportunities for getting power back. Of course, it really comes down to kind of the same ones again. CPU, disk, and net are the first three you always think of, whether you're looking at perf or power. Mm. On the CPU side, we're already doing a fairly decent job of manipulating the CPU frequencies and power states to get as much as we could out of those. We actually spent more time looking at memory this release. A lot of it ended up being more preparatory for the next release. We got a feature coded, but we couldn't actually activate it during Windows 8, so I won't go into great detail. But and the reason was the hardware wasn't ready yet. We actually got a little bit ahead of the hardware curve. This is publicly known. We actually presented this back at the Build conference. We created this capability called Windows Memory Cooling, where we can take memory and kind of like with the old McDonald's McDLT, there's the hot side hot and the cold side cold. We would actually take memory and decide these are the hot pages, these are the cold pages. Let's segregate them, and then we can take the cold pages on a set of DIMMs and drop them into self-refresh or into a lower power state, basically. Well, that requires a lot of tracking of the activity that's going on potentially, you know, a terabyte of memory or whatever you'd have in that server. A lot of code. It was like 20,000 lines of code that we ended up doing to do this tracking of memory information and then creating an environment where you can take, let's say, half of memory and drop it into a low power state. Now, on one server, that might mean you save 5 watts. On 50,000 servers, you know, you do the multiplication, and all of a sudden, it starts to become a lot of money, a lot of energy, a lot of heating. Because remember, in a data center, for every watt you use, there's some fraction of a watt, if not a full watt, of cooling that you have to have. And so everything's multiplied by the thermal factor as well in a data center. So anytime you can save a watt here and a watt there and multiply that by thousands of machines, that's a big deal. These guys care about saving a couple watts per machine. These guys care a lot about that.
Sure.
It means they can have that many more transactions in that data center, right? They don't have to build another one for another year. It gives another year of life before they have to think out what's the next thing we have to do to get, you know, a million more transactions into that data center, and then another million, then another million. So server power is not flashy. But to a certain segment of people in the world, it's incredibly important.
Absolutely.
And we are definitely invested in server power and continue to work with IHVs and OEMs on how to make sure that Windows and the hardware are finding the best possible ways to be power efficient on these systems. It's crucial. And again, looking forward a little bit, looking at what the server guys are planning for the next time around, there's some very exciting stuff there as well. Can't go into, obviously, but I think there's some neat new opportunities in the cloud space. With the new types of servers that will be coming available, new technologies, and looking at how Windows can be a player and make sure that we're always doing the right thing to enable our hardware partners to actually turn on those features and functionality. So very cool stuff coming down the line as well.
Great. Now, with Windows 8 on the client,
yep.
Which is very exciting, one of the things, as you were talking earlier, that kind of struck me, but I think it's really important to talk about, is this notion of energy efficient programming, right? As opposed to just energy efficient computing. That's a side effect of learning how to program in such a way where you don't have to consume so many electrons or spend them. So can you reflect a little bit on how your team and yourself have sort of evolved? So now when you go into a project, you've trained yourselves to think through, it's you know, yeah, we want to save battery life, we want Windows, you know, we want users to have to charge. So there's the user state. I don't want this person to have to you know, plug in their laptop every 2 hours because the battery is going down. They're using IE and surfing the web, what most people are doing, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, as a programmer, what sort of things can you share with other programmers in terms of think through?
Sure. We actually internally developed something we called the Power Cookbook a while back, which was kind of, okay, here's the top 10 things. I probably can't rattle off all 10, but mm-hmm. you know, here's the top 10 things that you can do or things that you shouldn't do in order to make sure that we're improving our power efficiency over time. And a lot of them are kind of obvious, but at the same time, unless you're thinking about it and actually keeping that in mind, they're easy to miss or easy to trade off, even unconsciously. Everything's a trade-off, and that's something that the perf team, if you're a perf guy, you know that everything's a trade-off. It's always reliability or security or performance or manageability or power or da-da-da-da. There's just this whole long list of things, right? It's very easy to trade off power and not realize it if you're not thinking about the impact of what you're doing. So, obviously, resource utilization is the easiest place to start. If you're not using a resource, there's an opportunity for the OS to turn it down to a lower state and it'll use less power. So just getting your CPU path down, getting the amount of network activity down, getting the number of disk IOs down, just reducing is a win across the board. It'll win in performance, it'll win in power, it'll win in other areas as well. So that's kind of the starting point, is do what you've always been doing, but think about it from a power perspective as well as from a performance perspective and other reasons to simplify and get things smaller. The next thing is probably the burstiness, which I talked about before. Don't spread it out. Performance reasons, sometimes that's kind of the right thing to do, but if you're keeping power in mind, spreading it out is usually the wrong thing to do. Mm-hmm. Now, we have to keep the user in mind, though. You can't, power is not everything, clearly. Mm-hmm. Battery life isn't important if the experience stinks.
Yes.
So responsiveness is crucial. So we're constantly playing this balance between, for example, performance and power, making sure we're responsive. But there's a lot of times where you don't need to be responsive. If you're reading a web page or an email or if you're playing a video, as long as you're meeting the screen rate successfully, anything more than that is useless. The user's getting nothing out of the fact that, ooh, I got that frame ready quicker. Who cares? You weren't going to display it until 15 milliseconds later anyways. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's all about the balance. Burstiness and compressing things and making sure that you're making as efficient use as possible of each resource, whether it's network, disk, CPU, or other components like the GPS or sensors or pick your favorite peripheral that you have on your system. Mm-hmm. Thinking about how you can do things in bursts is usually a big win. Next thing is probably something in regards to making sure that you're event-driven rather than using polling or spinning or some of these things where basically you're waking up to check on something. Well, 99.99% of the time, usually when you're in a mode like that, you wake up and discover nothing happened, nothing went on, I can go back to sleep now. Well, that's a lot of time to wake up the system and do nothing. So you got to move to an event-driven model. Wait till there's some sort of stimulus, right? The user touches the screen or a network packet comes in or something happens that says, oh, I got something to do now. I'm going to wake up and actually do it. Mm-hmm. Don't constantly beat on the dog and, you know, waking him up. Just let him sleep for as long as you can until an event comes in that's worth doing something about.
Great.
Right? There's lots of little events that aren't worth doing anything about either, so really being able to cull those out and say, it's not worth waking up the user right now. He's watching a video. I don't really need to do that right now. So that's another area. And then there's low-level gritty details like use these APIs versus those APIs. And there's some of that advice that we also can give. For example, when you're setting up a timer, whenever possible, set up a coalescible timer, which is a separate API in Win32. Mm. Don't just do a regular timer. Do a coalescible timer, which allows you to actually specify sort of a tolerance interval, a slop period, if you will, where we with the kernel team change the timer algorithms. So we can actually look at all the timers that are coming up and saying, you know, this guy's got a tolerance and this guy's got a tolerance. I can actually smush them together and just wake up once rather than twice. Things like that have a tremendous win because, awesome. Again, it gets everything nice and compressed and bursty. Mm-hmm. So there's things like that we've advised developers on. You know, this API, really, can't you use this one instead? It's going to give you a better overall power efficient experience. And if you specify your tolerances right, for example, in the timer case, the user has no impact, right? The user doesn't care that it happened 10 milliseconds later. He can't even detect that. Mm. So,
you know, finally,
yep.
Because I don't want to take too much of your time, but this is really excellent conversation. I wanted to kind of go through a couple scenarios. Sure. I think, you know, people, as users, you know, we do things and things happen. But I kind of want to go, so I have my Windows 8 PC or tablet that has one of those cool fancy lids.
Yep.
Everyone's seen the Surface. I can't wait to get one.
Yep.
But anyway, I close it. What happens?
You close it. There is a there is a series of activities that immediately occur. It actually is a bunch of different stages, like I think it's nine different stages that occur. Mm. And we've actually added a lot of telemetry into the system. We could go on for a long time just talking about telemetry, but we can actually see this happening when we have the full telemetry engaged up of it's going into the system. It's doing things like saying, okay, all of the desktop apps, you guys need to go away. And so those basically get completely shut down for the duration of while you're in connected standby. All of the new mode apps with the new interfaces.
Modern UI style?
Yes, modern UI, yes. Try not to use the other M word, which we're not supposed to use anymore, right? Those guys, we look and say, okay, unless you're one of the lock screen apps, you go away too. The lock screen guys, okay, you get to have a certain amount of activity because you've been, you know, basically specified by the user that it's okay if they do some background stuff, and so your mail app and your Skype app, et cetera, et cetera. Those guys get to stay awake to the degree that background activity can occur. We look at all the session one services versus the session zero services. I won't go into details, but basically, let's say the less critical and important services in the system, those guys need to all basically go away or be throttled down significantly. So there's a series of stages where we basically say, okay, you guys shut down, you guys get quiet, you guys get throttled, you guys shut down, and then you get down to the lower levels, we can actually start taking devices. And we work with this new interface called the PEP, the Power Engine plugin, which in a SOC device, a SOC system like an ARM system, knows everything about how all the clocks and the frequencies and the voltages in the system are related to each other. And he's got the intelligence to say, oh, if the GPS can be shut down and the Bluetooth can be shut down, I can shut down this voltage regulator in between as well and get, you know, even more power savings. So we don't want to know that, right? Mm-hmm. Windows doesn't want to have to know the hardware layout of every single device in the world. Mm-hmm. But through this interface, we're able to engage with the devices on the system and, you know, start dropping them off. GPS goes down, the sensors go down, this goes down, and we quiet everything down to the point where we can actually shut the SOC off itself. And the only thing left alive on the system, so to speak, is the network card, which is waiting for just those special packets to come in for the lock screen apps, and the power button. And once you get to that level, you're down there. You're in the lowest state. It's actually called DRIPS. Let me see if I can remember what the acronym stands for here. Deepest runtime idle power state.
Nice.
I think I got that right.
Yeah, totally.
I may be off on one, but they won't know.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're down as deep as you can go on the platform at that point, and that's kind of the lowest state. Now, 30 seconds later, it's going to poke its head up above water, see if there's anything that needs to be done, and hopefully drop right back down again within, let's say, a couple hundred milliseconds.
Okay.
We don't even want to wake up for a full second if we don't have to. So we're hoping we wake up and just drop right back down again. And every 30 seconds, poke your head up, just see, hey, is there some really important piece of background stuff I need to do? If not, cool, back to DRIPS.
Excellent. Now, you know, what's the dual of DRIPS? Because I'm opening the lid.
Right. It's kind of like unrolling the same thing, so that the states are actually numbered, like 1 through 9, or 1 through 8, and you literally start waking things up in exactly the same order that you took them down, because you took them down in a certain order for a reason, right? There's dependencies, and you have to make sure you don't get into a state where you're shutting somebody down, and he's dependent on something that you already shut down, and now the communication can't occur. So you're really just unrolling it. You're going from that bottom state to the next state to the next state until you get back up to the point that you're completely alive, and you're back to the total user experience at that point.
That's awesome.
So it really is just a stack function, if you will. You go down, you come right back up again.
Yep. That's very fast.
It is very
fast. It's ridiculously fast.
It's pretty incredible, even on a traditional laptop system with the new Hyper Boot stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, even
which we will
my standard
about.
Laptop I have over there comes back up again so much quicker on Windows 8 than I did in Windows 7. Mm-hmm. Nothing against the guys that worked on Windows 7. I know them. They're right down the hall. They did a great job. They made great advances.
Yeah.
But come on, Windows 8, killer when it comes back to bring the screen back on again, whether you're on a connected standby system or a traditional system.
Absolutely. I've noticed even booting cold is just unbelievable.
Yep. We're a lot quicker than we used to be.
Yes, and that's good stuff. And all with, you know, you mentioned at the very beginning about performance and power, but it's really interesting that you guys have pulled off, of course, with hardware partners and you know, all over. Windows is basically, you know, more than a few buildings. It's several buildings and several teams have done unbelievable work because, as you said, I mean, you get power efficiency and performance, right? Booting fast is a performance win.
Yep.
Closing down fast is a performance win.
Yep.
And having battery life that doesn't get impacted too heavily by that is amazing. So congratulations and great work. And I know that you're, you know, this is just the beginning of a very interesting journey.
Absolutely. The next release, there's all sorts of things that that we've already identified that are going to be quite challenging. Mm. And at the same time, I think the user is going to get a tremendous boost forward on the next release as well. This was certainly a turning point in a lot of ways for us, and from my perspective, raising power to a primary criteria and really shining the light on battery life has been a real sea change for us here, and we're nowhere near done on that. We've got plenty of opportunity left on the table.
Sure, and I think that's probably true for anybody that makes general purpose operating systems for a mass market.
You don't ever get done.
No, there is no done. Take care.
Absolutely.
Thank you, man. Great to meet you.
Yep.